the pre-season grind's behind you. You're looking forward to the games. I wonder how that plays with someone that's been in the system for 16 years and for the first time now sits back and contemplates life without footy. And Heath Shaw's that man. He joins us in the studio. G'day, Heather.
Hey, mate. Thanks for having me.
325 games, premiership, two All-Australians, 16 pre-seasons. What's this one been like?
This one's been very relaxing. The thought of pre-season and the hard slog is not there, apart from a little stint at East Keele that I'm doing at the moment, which is very relaxed environment, very different environment. And, I'm just enjoying a bit more freedom and not having to worry about going into meetings and game plans and ball movement and all zones and all that sort of stuff. So all the things that I loved during footy, I'm not missing them one bit.
You're back in Melbourne. You're back in town.
Yeah, back in Melbourne, doing like a little bit of fly in, fly out, Sydney and Melbourne. Still spending a bit of time up there when I can because it is a lovely city up there. But yeah, back in Melbourne as my home.
I thought you were doing pub and wine reviews and restaurant reviews because every time I see you in my local area, you're walking out of an establishment.
Yeah, well, missed a lot of people since I've been up in Sydney, so I've been doing a lot of catching up. So usually that's either a beer or a coffee. So
hang on, when you're doing your fly in, fly out to Sydney, are you just flying in and flying out for a coffee?
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes I have to, but it's been good to sort of reconnect with a lot of people back here. As I said, I love Sydney, love spending time up there, and I do have a girlfriend up there, so I probably should spend some time up there at some point as well.
Now I understand why.
Hang on, so you left your girl up in Sydney?
Yeah, well...
Is she in a hub up there, is she?
No, she's got a job. I don't say. I've moved back to Melbourne, and yeah, we're just doing a little bit of long distance at the moment, which is not too bad.
Are you planning to bring her down at any time, or...?
We'll see how things go.
Tim?
It's okay.
A long weekend this weekend.
Exactly.
So she's got to work.
I was saying to you before, I've never seen you look fitter, actually. And I had you pegged as a bloke that once he finished his AFL career...
A blowout.
I was thinking blowout, but you actually look thinner than what you did when you played.
Yeah, there was definitely potential for the blowout. I was a chubby kid back in the day. But, yeah, I've sort of... The theory was that if I do go out and overindulge and go out for a long lunch or have a few too many wines, I'll go for a run the next day. And it's fair to say I've been running a fair bit. So managed to stay reasonably fit and actually started to enjoy running a little bit as well. It's good fun running around Albert Park Lake. And even though it's windy as all hell, it's still an enjoyable little run.
And you're going to play though too, aren't you?
Yeah, East Keele, Division 2 in the Essendon League. A mate of mine's coach down there, so he convinced me to pull the boots on again. And yeah, it's good to get out there and have a kick at a very relaxed level. And football clubs are amazing things, and I think I'll miss that about AFL and being involved in a footy club. So local footy clubs are very unique and enjoying every minute.
What is the biggest challenge? I maintain that retiring from footy, and then that was the biggest it changed your whole lifestyle. So for since we were 16, 17, 18, we were told where to be, what to do, what time. You could get on a holiday here, you could travel here. If you want to get married, then there's your window there. If you're going to have your children, off-season might be better. All that stuff was dictated by football. Now you've got none of that. So what's your mind like right now?
Yeah, I sort of explain it to people like – You leave like high school, and when you get drafted, you go back to school because you're, like you said, you're getting told exactly where to be most minutes of the day, and you get your schedule for the year, which is the fixture, and you know exactly where you're going to be. So that routine is, it was good for me, someone who's got ADD, and it sort of makes life a lot easier. But when that routine's taken away from you, it can be hard to adjust to. So for me, it's been a little bit of running, getting myself busy. I'm doing a little development with Alan Didak, so that's sort of going to keep us busy as well. And I think the finding your own little routine now away from football is the main thing. And but at the same time, having time to relax and do absolutely nothing.
Mm. You mentioned Alan Didak. That's a perfect segue because a text just came through on the temper text that you're already building a rat pack there at East Keele. Or is that right? How do you form a new rat pack?
With the Grig pig, well, whoever he is.
I did say to the coach, I don't know if I can play here. And he's asked me, he said, why is that? I said, because I don't have any tattoos.
Is it a heavily tattooed club?
There's a few tattoos. I'm a clean skin, so I felt a little bit uncomfortable walking in. But No, I'm sure we could find a couple of guys that would fit their Rat Pack mould pretty well.
Who is in your Rat Pack, your Collingwood Rat Pack? Who's still part of your Rat Pack?
Well, it's a tough question.
Why is that?
Because it's a fairly wide group.
Is there wannabe rats?
There is wannabe rats, of course. It's a pretty cool group. Everyone wants to be a part of it. But I think, obviously, the Rat Pack sort of started before I got to Collingwood. There was a few guys, Heath Scotland, Ben Kinnear and these sort of guys with Ben Johnson, Dane Swan, Chris Tarrant. My brother thrown in there a little bit, and then sort of the next sort of generation coming along with sort of me, right. Daisy, obviously Dids in there and Swanee. So it's a wider group than was sort of first thought. But the photo that I've got, and I think most of the boys have got the four guys. It was Dids, myself, Swanee, and Jono after the premiership. Yeah. All holding a beer, all with a premiership medal.
That's what I think.
Yeah. When you think Rat Pack, what do you think?
When I think rats, they're the four rats, I think.
It's a good photo. it's a good photo of rats.
to get into the Hell's Angels, I've read along the way that you've got to bite off a chicken's head or something like that. What is it? What is the initiation that you need to pass to get into your Rat Pack?
I think there wasn't really like a written initiation, but it was definitely a front or back page sort of setup. I think it was some form of indiscretion where there was a front or back page picture with either the head down or at a press conference in the suit with no sponsors behind you. It's pretty standard procedure. I've gone through a few of those, so I think that's part of the initiation.
Hey, can I straighten up a touch, Reece, your brother, who you're very close to, and we love talking to him. And every time we talk or interview you two, there's a great camaraderie and feeling and love. Obviously, how's he tracking? He's had a tough initiation to coaching. He's out now. He's up at the Gold Coast. How's he going?
Yeah, he's going really well. As much as I was very hesitant about him getting back into football, AFL football, and coaching this year, I think the job at the Gold Coast with Stewie Jew, one of his best mates, and the head of development and developing younger kids up there, was probably the perfect role for him. Yeah. So as much as I was hesitant about the initial AFL, entering back into AFL ranks, it was the perfect job, and him and the family have moved up there, and he's enjoying every minute of it. And I think for him, getting back into it, like we spoke about, like getting out of football, He got out of the coaching game in a way in AFL, but he still loved coaching. So he hadn't lost the passion to coach. It was just the situation didn't work out for him. So it's good that now he's got that role, and I think he'll be great at it for them.
You're really close as brothers, I know that. How difficult was it for you last year to see him going through what he was going through?
It was weird, because in the hub I was actually in the same place as North, so it was great. So the Giants and North and West Coast were all in Sanctuary Cove, and it was great because I got to see niece and nephew, my two nephews and my sister-in-law nearly every day. Didn't see Reece as much because he was busy. So it was sort of hard, and I sort of understood the pressures that were coming to him, but didn't know the extreme of it until sort of the end of the season or towards the end of the season. So it was difficult sort of after the season to see that pan out the way it did, but he's bounced back pretty well, and he's in a good spot now.
What happened in the last couple of weeks there with Hub Life, and just seemed to get very messy from a GWS Giants point of view? So two-part question. Leon, in your opinion, has he still got the players and the faith and, you know, the buy-in, and what happened in that period there?
The last 2 weeks, yeah, it was tough for everyone in the hub, but even more so when sort of looking forward to 2021 and what was going to happen, and staff cuts, potential player cuts, and towards the end of the year is always a little bit messy anyway. But for the Giants, it was probably even messier than most, because we had two games where we had to win to make the finals. We dropped our captain for one of those. One of our players told the club that he was leaving and going to another club.
Aidan Corr.
Who was with North Melbourne in the hub, so he might have been having some secret meetings there on the side. But and then he got told to leave. And straight away. And he's a good friend of mine, Corey, and I remember that night and that situation there when he was a bit flustered. He was like,
of course.
He didn't think it would pan out that way. And And yeah, the last 2 weeks, staff getting told that they didn't have a job next year and them leaving. And
Were they left immediately? Some did.
Some left straight away. So it was really messy. And it was funny because when you sort of look back at it now, and even at the time, it's like football was like the last thing, but football was the most important thing.
Well, you're still alive. You still had your season alive.
Yeah, we were still alive, and we were still alive going into the last game. But yeah, it was really hard. And for someone who's wants to win every game and is a bit of a competitive beast, we sort of lost our focus on which was playing football and winning games. And it was a tough situation. And watching one of my best mates and captain go through, sort of in a way that it was the embarrassment of being dropped, and not being able to, sort of lead his team or bounce back because he's not out there. And it's hard to be a leader and be a captain from the sideline when you're actually available to play. When you're injured or anything like that, it's a bit easier. But for him, I think he found it hard to try and motivate the boys or be that leader when, for whatever reason it was, he wasn't playing.
You're not a shrinking violet. and that's to your strength. So I don't suspect that you would have sat back whilst all this was unfolding and not said something.
I'm fairly opinionated, and I have been over my career. It's got me into a bit of trouble over the journey. But, yeah, the conversation was had, and with myself, it was at one point it was myself, Leon, and Matt DeBoer, because we had a meeting, and me and Matty were in there, and we got called back because Matty was in the leadership group, and I was a senior player. And I think Leon knew my, obviously, relationship with Cogs and just said what was happening. Said that Cogs wouldn't be playing, and obviously gave him my thoughts on what I thought was.
How strong did you go?
I just said, like I said before, it's whether it was Cogs or whether he was my best mate or not my best mate. I think he was in the best 22, and I want to win. So like, I want my best team out there. I say like it's my team, because when I'm out there, it is my team, and that's the way I feel about playing football and winning. And I said it was the wrong decision, and I was pretty strong in the fact that we needed to make it known that he was being dropped and it wasn't rested or soreness.
Sugarcoating.
Yeah, it just causes more bullshit around it. So I just said, nah, we have to, if we're doing it, we're doing it, and we're just being totally honest about it. And from there it was...
Did you think they were going to put him out as rested, or that was...
I didn't know what the plan was, but I just... In my head, it sort of popped up. And I think Matty mentioned it in the meeting, and I was just like, nah, that's not happening.
Is there a rebuild that needs to take place then? Do you think Leon needs to rebuild that group? Was your view reflective of a lot of other players, did you think, at the time?
Oh, definitely. I think it was a surprise to a lot of people that Cogs was out, and a lot of people thought that he should still be in. It was a coach and match committee decision to not play him. And... rebuild, it's a tough one, and people ask about the players that have left: Core, Williams, Jeremy Cameron, and then a 35-year-old back pocket in myself. But it's hard to replace like guys like Zach, who've been there from the start, and he's actually become a really good player. And then it's hard to replace Jeremy Cameron, who's been leading goal kicker ever since he's been there, and it's. In a full season, it's 50 goals you have to replace. Mm. No matter how you like talk about it, think about it, it's still 50 goals. When Ronaldo left Real Madrid, you still have to replace Ronaldo's 40 goals with something else. So it's tough, and how you go about that is it a rebuild, or is it bring players in, or is it bank on the guys that are already there?
I was thinking more along the lines of Leon Cameron with the players themselves in terms of what took place, how they reacted to it, and then maybe his relationship with the players. Is that a rebuild, that type of relationship, or not?
I don't think so. I think from last year, the sort of the scars of last year are going to be there slightly, but it is a new year. It's a fresh year, and hopefully we have a clean year where there's no hubs and there's none of that sort of stuff. And the boys can just play football, because there was a lot of, like I spoke about before, there's a lot of stuff around football and you lose track of actually just playing football. In pre-season, the best thing about pre-season is you're actually not worrying about games, you're just worrying about training and getting fit. And it's so much easier. But when games come around, you sort of tighten up a bit. You get a bit more stressed around the performance of playing and the performance of it's winning, losing, and analysing that. And I sort of the pressure brings out the best and the worst in people. So I think that's why we sort of love the game so much as well. It brings you back in because that pressure is great when you win or you perform on a big stage or you win a premiership or whatever it is. But then the lulls of like losing and being out of form and being dropped, that balance there is tough. And it's going to be an interesting year, I think. And looking forward to watching from the side.
Passion, that's what makes it roll around. Were you in? I'm going to keep holding you on for as long as you can. You can tell me to go away. Lenny Hayes is one of the great people in footy. One of the greatest players that I've seen play the game and then goes into coaching, maybe a great coach, you can tell me. I'm sure because he's got this great feel about him. But because of the cuts, he's lost to the game. Are you fearful that with the cuts that we're seeing, we're going to lose really good people to footy?
I think, and to be honest, I think we're not actually getting the best coaches that are out there because it's a low-paying job for what you do. The effort that the assistant coaches and head coaches put in is a lot. It's double, triple what players actually do, and players get paid really, really well for what we do, and then the coaches not as well, and they're doing a lot more work. So losing Lenny was a tough one, but he's got a young family, and family comes first in a way, and it is time-consuming and pay cut with probably more work because you've got less people helping out. He just thought that balance was off, so he chose to go down that path. And I think if you look over the past sort of 5, maybe even 10 years, that we've lost a lot of good quality even coaches, assistant coaches, because of that balance, the work and life. And it's like I can get a job Monday to Friday, which pays maybe a little bit less than as an AFL coach, but I get my weekends back. Mm. I know I finish at 5 or I finish at 4, and it's not travelling away on the weekend, spending a whole weekend away from your family and all that stuff. And the passion for footy is still there, I think, but that it does take the edge off a little bit.
Eddie Maguire stepping down. Did that surprise you, knowing Eddie and the love and the passion for his great footy club?
Him actually stepping down, yes. Because he had done so much for the club, and I can talk personally. He's done a hell of a lot for me and a few of those rats we were talking about before. And for the club, but when I sort of growing up, Eddie's been there for over 20 years, I think it was. So sort of down the bottom, struggling away. I think that's when my uncle was coaching. They were down the bottom and struggling away. So, and he's sort of built it up to become the powerhouse that it is today. And with that comes a lot of pressure and a lot of scrutiny. And he's stuffed up along the way, like we all have. And we learn from our mistakes. But I think it was just the fact that he couldn't sort of – he planned to sort of go out at the end of the year and then it's got fast-tracked a little bit was disappointing. But I said to him when I messaged him, I said, you might enjoy that freedom of not having that pressure around you like me at the moment, no job. I think Eddie's got a few jobs. But having that sort of relaxing, he can go spend some more time with his family and all of the above. So
when you read all the fallout from Collingwood and the racism report and that type of thing, do you recognise that football club? Is that the football club that you felt that you were representing at the time?
Definitely not. It is. It's tough. It's such a sensitive topic. And to be honest, it's with the racism stuff. It is Collingwood Football Club, and there has been those incidences over a long period of time. And but it's it is a community issue. It is a society issue as well. And I think the better we are at and the community in terms of football community and sporting community and just community in general, the better we are at just like listening and learning, the better we'll be. I don't think it'll be hard to get rid of race completely. We spoke about passion in football. Passion in football brings out the best and worst in people, whether it's supporters, whether it's players and people watching. It has that effect on people, and that's why a lot of these incidents pop up throughout sport. But the more we sort of listen and learn and understand, the better we'll be. I know at the Giants, their Indigenous program was very, very good. And in the years that I was there, I learned a lot more than I learned in my previous years playing sport and playing football. So it's definitely, you're never too old to keep on learning. And like I said before, it's just about listening and then that education around that as well, which I think we are getting better, but there's a long way to go.
If you had a chance to speak to Heredia, what would you say to him?
Is it an
apology the first starting point?
It definitely, it would be an acknowledgement of, the way he felt, because back then, me personally, I think we grew up sort of along the same lines. I think he got drafted the same year or the year after me. I think we debuted within a week of each other, and then we spent, 8 years together playing in the same back line. And back lines are, I know you're a forward, Gary, but back lines are always a lot tighter than forward lines, and they're always a bit closer.
No doubt about that.
And there's always that bond with the backman. So for me, it's hard to see the way this has all sort of panned out. And like I said before, to just be sort of asking questions and listening and learning and understanding.
You mentioned before about Eddie and the times you, as part of the Rat Pack, had been helped by him. Were you ever summoned to his home late at night for a fireside one-on-one chat?
I always, even when I got in life membership at Collingwood, I had a missed call from Eddie and then a message from Eddie. And usually when you get a missed call from Eddie and a message, it's a bad thing. So I wasn't even playing for Collingwood. I wasn't even playing for the Giants, and I was stressing out about this call and having to ring Eddie back. But that was a good phone call. And like I said, the missed call, when Eddie's ringing, there's a missed call and followed up by a message, usually wasn't going to be great. But the thing with Eddie is you get your whack, or you do your punishment, and then it gives you a cuddle afterwards. Very similar to what Mick was. Mick was very much along those lines, and everyone makes mistakes, and from there, if you learn then and you become a better person, then I think they appreciate that a lot more. And if you don't learn, and took a few of us a couple of times to learn from that, but I think from that we've become better people, and that's why we're so close.
Narrowly Meadows is a passionate Fremantle supporter, and it's great to have her on the line. Go, Nez.
I was going to say that I'm really flattered that you picked me out of the thousands of options on the East Coast for Freo. I feel really, really special, but it's great to be on board.
Well, Rove McManus didn't take our call. No. You're our girl. Don't you worry about that. Hey, you've been busy. You've been doing the IPL. You've been doing the Australian Open. You've had a fair bit on your plate.
Yeah, it's been really fun, actually, doing the NBL last night. So I watched another West Australian team get a win over a Melbourne team, which is always good, but... yeah, that and the podcast, so staying busy enough. It's been good fun.
The podcast, of course, called Ordinarily. Gee, that's a very, very witty and clever name. Did you come up with that on your own, Narrowly, or did you have some help with that?
Ordinarily speaking, yeah. That is from when I was a kid. My best friend's mum used to call me X for extraordinarily, and I thought that would be a bit arrogant. So I went with ordinarily speaking instead. But yeah, just a podcast that celebrates resilience in sport and tells the human stories of the athletes. So it's a nice, deep and meaningful podcast that hopefully people get a fair bit out of listening to it.
You've had Nick Nat and Thanasi Kokkinakis. The Thanasi, you've been, that would be, I must listen to the Nick Nat and Thanasi one. That sounds to me like it'd be great listening.
Yeah, look, both of them really open up. Nick Natanui's story is obviously amazing, but he's such an amazing storyteller. And I've known Nick for a few years now, and he tells a few stories, some heartbreaking, some, you know, just pure entertainment. And so, yeah, I feel like people listening get a real insight into what he's actually like as a person. So if you get the chance, check it out. And then Thanasi Kokkinakis came out yesterday, just talking about the depths of his mental health issues through going all the injuries that he has. And I just think people will listen to it, and it's a whole nother reason to support Thanasi and get behind him in his tennis career.
Hey, Narrowly, just quickly, if Nick Nat lived over here on the East Coast, do you think that he would be the highest profile AFL player given his personality?
I think he almost is anyway. And he talks about this in the podcast, but over in Perth, he can barely leave his house because everyone knows who he is. I mean, he stands out. And even over on the East Coast, I mean, I often joke with Lachie Neal about the fact that he had to go to Brisbane to get recognised, like, and just how crazy that is. But Nick Natanui is just transcends AFL, I think. And, yeah, so he's huge. He's huge. And he's such a... I don't think there's a better role model in the AFL for what he's overcome and how he articulates it as well.
He is full of personality too. Okay, we need to get on to this preview. Which player will be a surprise top five finisher, do you think, in the best and fairest at Freo at the end of the season?
Not surprised by talent, but surprised by actually getting a proper run at it. I'm going to go with Alex Pearce. Hasn't played since round 11, 2019, and those luscious long locks are going to help him along the way stand out and get a few votes. But he's a star, Alex Pearce, and I'm so excited to see him get a proper run at it.
So he and Hamling played, I think, last week in their first practice matches. So getting those two in the back into that back six is going to help them enormously.
It's the first time the word first time the word luscious has been used during one of these previews too.
Bring something different to the table, Tim.
I'm enjoying it.
There's always distractions that clubs have to deal with. How well they deal with them and how big they get can sometimes be an indication of how well the club's set up. What might be the biggest distraction for this footy club, Fremantle, this year?
I think it's still the obvious. I think Mark McGowan and the potential border closures for WA teams, it's a lot. So I still think that that's probably just going to be hovering over the top of them, even if, fingers crossed, we don't get any more border closures. Just the knowledge that it could be coming.
Of those recruits of the new Dockers, who excites you the most?
Okay, I'm going to go with, I know he's not a new recruit this year, but Michael Frederick, because last year he played a handful of games and the excitement that he provided, he has got some serious talent and the smile on his face when he does it as well. Second year, fitter, bit more experienced. And, you know, these guys sort of missed out on a lot of footy last year as well with the other competitions, you know, not happening as they normally would. So I just cannot wait to watch the development of Rick, they call him.
Nerilee Meadows is restoring credibility into our unconventional previews.
Sorry, I'm taking it too seriously.
No. Please. No. Please.
This is my only opportunity for players.
Don't take me the wrong way. We've had, I think, five of these.
We had a hiccup during the
four
week.
Four were great, and then Simon O'Donnell crashed it off the road and almost ruined it. But you've got us back on track, which we're loving. Tell me this. Where are we up to, Wispy? Which player on the list?
Yep.
We all do this. We got a player on the list that we're not quite sure about. We think maybe not in other days. You do think, no, they're not going to get there. Which one is on the list you're not sure about, but by the year's end, you will be?
McPhee and Daniel Pearce back in the day were always mine, and particularly Pearce. Never came good, unfortunately, in my mind. But this is a bit different because I feel like the one that I'm not sure about is more to do with, I'm not sure how his body's going to hold up. But Stephen Hill, I think, is one of the most underrated and underappreciated players as far as skill goes and skill execution in the entire competition. But he just keeps getting injury after injury and just niggly ones that hang around. So I'm desperately hoping that this year is the year that he gets back to full fitness and has a proper crack at it. So, yeah, he's a superstar when he's absolutely, you know, fit and going, but we just haven't seen him fit and going for years.
Well, Nerilee, I hear that you're like a five-star chef. So if you're inviting four players from Freo around to your place for a dinner party, who might they be?
All right, if it's a dinner party at my place or if it's at a restaurant, okay? So I'd love to learn a little bit more about a couple of the youngsters that are going to be stars. So Liam Henry and Michael Frederick, who I already mentioned, they're the couple of youngsters that I just think in a few years' time we're going to be going, oh, how good was that to watch them? Sonny, little Michael Walters for the laugh, the entertainment, the dance moves. He brings a bit of everything, Sonny. It's never boring when he's around. And then I've put down Nat Fyfe to pick up the tab at the end of the night. So
beautifully done.
He might be able to fly you there in the chopper as well.
Exactly. Or pick me up in the big truck that he drives around in the off-season.
There's the last one. You smashed this. You and Katie Price heads bobbing at the moment for the best preview so far, so this might get you across the line. You're very, very...
And shout out to Katie, by the way. She had surgery last week on her foot, so she's in recovery mode at the moment.
Oh, no. Stress fracture?
It's an old injury that just needed a reconstruction, basically, to fix it all up. Geez.
How many is she going to miss? How many weeks is she going to miss?
A few.
Now, listen, if you were to sit down with a man who has been described off our temper text machine as J-Lo. If you were to sit down with the coach of Fremantle, what would your one suggestion be for him?
My suggestion, undisputedly, is get inspired by the girls. We were robbed of a flag last year. We're 4 from 5 this year with a percentage of 225. Just go and find out what they're doing well and replicate it.
From AFL.com.au, Nathan Buckley says he'd walk away from coaching the club at the end of this season if he felt the Magpies were better off with a new direction. Buckley's 2-year contract expires at the end of this season and the club will not rush into negotiations on a new deal. That part of the story's just gone up. We got that, Grab. Let's have a listen to this.
I don't feel like I have to be the senior coach going forward. You know, if that's the best thing for the club, and I feel that I can still impact and help the club move towards contending consistently and winning flags, well then I'll put my hand up. And if the club felt that it was better to go in another direction, well then I would understand that. So that conversation will be held in good faith, and you know, it's not something that we'll be addressing until later in the year.
Yeah, that's interesting. Matthew
Rendell was interviewed on the weekend about this. He had an interesting take on it. He said, we're all assuming that he wants to be the coach beyond this year. Everyone's sitting there going, oh, will Buckley be, you know, under pressure, or will Buckley be the coach of Collingwood next year? And, you know, if he's got to win 6 games in the first 10, otherwise, maybe he in his own mind, he's coming to the end of his tenure.
At Collingwood?
Yeah, and he's pretty relaxed about
it. I would think that he wants to be a coach, but maybe not necessarily a Collingwood. What sort of gravitas do you think that he would have and hold in the AFL community as a coach? Do you think that he would be quickly snapped up if he wasn't coaching Collingwood?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think he'd be in line for almost any job.
Really?
Yeah.
He hasn't been a premiership coach, though.
No, in line. So he would be absolutely considered for any job. Almost any job, I would imagine. Now, whether he ended up getting him once he'd gone through the process, but there wouldn't be too many clubs that are going.
Any job that became available.
Yeah, we've got a job, we've got a vacancy at our coaching job. Who's out there? His name would have to be in contention.
Now, whether he has to be better. This is his 10th year. So you have to be better for the experience, don't you?
Yeah, he's coached grand finals.
You've
got
to be a better coach than you were 10 years ago.
He's coached teams into grand. He's coached them into preliminary finals. He's had them competitive. I think he would. I mean, whether he gets the job or not is another point, but I don't think there'd be any coaching job that come up where Nathan Buckley was available that he wouldn't be spoken about.
He would be genuinely considered.